Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Is This Legal? My name is Russell Hebbets, and I am here with my co-host and lawyer extraordinaire, Colin McCallan.
Well, I don't know about the lawyer part, but I'll take the extraordinaire part.
he's at least extraordinaire. So how are you doing today, Colin? It is in Denver here. I mean, spring has sprung. We're looking at some beautiful 78-degree sunny days.
It makes
me want to get outside.
It's a good time. People are getting outside. The weather's been really nice. We just had record store day here in Colorado. The Nuggets are in the playoffs. Avalanche are in the playoffs. It's draft day today. What a perfect day to talk about some true crime.
I mean, right, exactly. So we're stuck in a studio. Maybe if you guys are listening, hopefully you're taking a walk in the park wherever you are and getting some outdoor time.
But if not, and if you're somewhere cold and miserable, I'm sorry. We just went through that here in Colorado. So
come visit Denver.
Yeah, exactly. In January. Get away from it.
Right. All right. So today we're going to be talking about a really interesting and nuanced and fairly dense case that's going on up in the Northeast. We want to give a shout out to Jay from Boston, who put us on to this story. He emailed us like we've been asking you guys to. This was not on our radar, but it is a big deal. This is the Karen Reed trial. Mm-hmm. This is currently underway. It's in jury selection right now. Miss Reed is on trial for second-degree murder and manslaughter. She is, and her defense team are alleging a huge government conspiracy to frame her for the murder of her boyfriend, John O'Keefe, who was a Boston police officer.
Interesting, yeah.
And so what we're going to do, we're going to dive into kind of part of this conspiracy, the allegations in this conspiracy. We're going to talk about what the prosecution, what their position is, their stance is, what they have to prove, what the defense is saying. We're going to go through a bit of the evidence. Now, guys, there's a lot going on here. Colin, are we going to get into every little detail?
We are probably not going to hit every detail on this case because there's a lot here. I think this is most likely going to be a contender, though, for a part two, maybe a part three as we go, especially as we learn more evidence in this case. But I think our goal today is to kind of introduce the listener, especially the person who doesn't know anything about this case, to kind of the top level stuff going on with this case. We're going to cover the prosecution's theory about why they believe that Karen Reed murdered John O'Keefe, her boyfriend. We're going to go into why the defense is alleging that this is a conspiracy involving top government officials, law enforcement officials, who are basically covering up their actions and framing Karen Reed. We're going to get into the weird stuff about this case, including a blogger by the name of Turtle Boy, who's going to make an appearance in this podcast. This is a wild, wild ride and probably an introductory episode with some follow-ups coming.
Yeah, for anyone out there after this, if you just start doing some research, there are so many rabbit holes that you can go down on this. So we're going to try to keep from stepping in those holes.
Yeah, we're going to try to keep this nice and clean. Keep you nice and on track.
Let's give you an outline of what happened. And we're going all the way back to January 28th and 29th of 2022 in Canton, Massachusetts.
So I guess going back to that point, Karen Reed is in a relationship with John O'Keefe, and things, Russ, are not going well in the relationship. Things are kind of rocky. About a month before this homicide occurred, these two were on a trip to Aruba. The prosecution is going to be very interested in trying to introduce a bunch of, evidence showing that these two people were fighting, that Karen Reed was really, really upset with John, that she accused him of cheating, of stepping outside of the relationship. and that this animosity, this fighting was going back and forth all the way up to the murder.
Yeah, so let's talk about those days of the murder, if it was a murder. So January 28th, Karen Reed and John O'Keefe go out to the bars in Canton, Massachusetts, and at 9 p.m. they go to one bar, and then they switch bars, and at about 11 they go to another bar. The second bar they go to is the Waterfall Bar and Grill, where they see a table with a bunch of people that John knows from law enforcement. They go and join them, and they drink there until last call, which is about midnight.
Right.
By all accounts, they're both drinking heavily. John is having a lot of beers, and Karen is down in vodka sodas. Mm-hmm. They leave at about midnight, and one of the other couples at the table, the Alberts.
Right. Exactly. Remember that name.
Yeah, remember that name. They invite everyone to go to an after party at the Alberts' home. This is where everyone agrees up until that point.
Right. Right.
From this point forward, there are divergent narratives. So here's what Karen says. Karen says she drives John to the Alberts. They put it in her GPS. She drives there. She drops him off. Then there's some confusion, but
she goes home. She says, I should say, she goes home because she's not feeling great.
Yeah, and there's a couple different versions. In one, she waits for a little bit to make sure he gets in okay. One, she just drops him off and then leaves. In any case, according to Karen, that is the last she sees of John O'Keefe. Now, the people at the party at the Alberts' house or at the gathering, they say he never made it. He never showed up. He never came in the house. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to about 5 a.m. when Karen Reed wakes up. She is on John's couch, having driven there after dropping him off. She realizes he never came home. She starts calling people. She starts calling people to try to figure out where he is. No one has seen him.
Yeah, she starts calling people who they met out at the bar. There was a group of people, and she's like, hey, where's John? He's not here. and depending on who you believe, and again, this is one of those caveats where we say we're going to have to wait and see what the testimony is like at trial. But she may have made statements like, oh, my gosh, I might have hit him. Or did something happen to him? Did he get hit by something?
Right. So. There's statements. Maybe she says, I hope he didn't get hit by a plow, because we forgot to set that stage.
Oh, yeah.
There's a nor'easter bearing down.
Yeah. This was like a blizzard that night.
Big old snowstorm that night. So she and a couple of other people hop in a car and go out looking for him. And at roughly between 5 and 6 a.m., Karen, in the passenger seat or back seat of a car, spots him on the side of a road, runs out there, and he is very badly injured. He is unresponsive.
He's buried in the snow.
Buried in the snow.
Yeah. She's the one who spots him. She's the one who discovers his body.
Right. And this is early morning hours before the sun has risen.
Right.
So they call 911. They take him to the hospital. He gets pronounced dead just a couple of hours later. The autopsy report or the medical examiner report says he has lots of trauma, blunt force trauma to his body, and also hypothermia is part of the cause of death, which is relevant. So remember that as well.
More on his injuries. The coroner cited that he had a laceration on his arm, that both of his eyes were basically black, that, you know, they were bruised. There were multiple skull fractures that he had, consistent with blunt force trauma. So
he had a cut above his right eye, a cut to the left side of his nose, a 2-inch laceration on the back of his head. So he had a lot of injuries here.
But they also indicate that the hypothermia contributed to his death, meaning that probably he wasn't dead when he was out in the cold dying.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's one, you know, those damages, those injuries are one very big piece of of evidence here that cuts either way, right? Because the prosecution's medical examiner says all of these injuries are consistent with being hit by a car.
Right.
Okay. And this is what the prosecution's saying. They're saying she hit him with a car, she backed into him or backed over him, and then drove away. Now let's take half a step back and tell you what she's charged with, because we didn't even get into that yet. So she was, just a couple days later after this, on February 2nd, she was charged with manslaughter, vehicular homicide, and leaving the scene of a vehicular homicide. She posted a $50,000 bond, and those charges were pending until June 9th of 2022, when a grand jury indicted her with more serious charges.
Specifically?
Second-degree murder, manslaughter, and leaving the scene.
Yeah. So this to me is interesting, Russ. Now, first of all, I think one thing you touched on it, but I'll give you a bit more information. She had a blood alcohol level. They tested her the following morning. It was her blood alcohol level after she had reported all of this was around like a 0.07, which is actually, you know,
it's just under the legal limit in most states, but exactly. You've clearly been drinking.
Yeah. And they can use that information to perform retrograde extrapolation, which would have put her at least at a 0.13, but possibly up to like a 0.2 or higher. So there's really no dispute that she was intoxicated that night around the time that this man died.
And just to give you guys perspective, 0.13 is definitely drunk, intoxicated. Their forensic toxicologist is saying that it could be as high as 0.290. A 290 would be just blackout drunk. That would be like extraordinarily intoxicated, where like, unless you're an alcoholic and someone who has like really a lot of experience handling high volumes of alcohol, that's the kind of level where you can't even walk. You wouldn't even be able to put a key in the ignition of a car, right? That is like maybe go to the hospital and get your stomach pumped for alcohol poisoning.
Right. Now, Russ, I want to talk about this charging decision, or I guess these charges, and maybe whether or not this poses any difficulty for the prosecution. Because here's what I'm thinking as you're talking to me about this. On the one hand, it sounds like the prosecution might be saying, okay, this lady was drunk, and because she was intoxicated, she ran over a boyfriend.
Right.
Okay. But then why, Russ, are they going to the lengths of wanting to introduce, like, for example, the stuff that happened a month earlier in Aruba? Or, you know, I can tell you the prosecution has a lot of text messages between these two people indicating, again, things were not great in this relationship. There was mistrust. There was anger. They were fighting. Why does that stuff matter if this is a manslaughter investigation?
So it wouldn't have mattered with her original charges.
Yeah.
Right? With her charges of manslaughter and vehicular homicide, you do not need to prove intent. Okay? That's not an element. The mere fact that it happened is enough to convict someone for those charges. That's what they initially charged her with, as if it was an accident. She is too drunk to see him behind her. She backs up. She hits him, and leaves him out there, presumably to die in the snow without even maybe knowing that she had done it. That would be enough if all those elements were proven to convict her of manslaughter and vehicular homicide, even without her knowing that she did it. Now, that second degree murder indictment means that the state submitted some evidence that she knew what she was doing,
right?
Or she knew what she did. There was intent there.
She's mad at her boyfriend because he's sleeping around. She has a little too much to drink. She decides to take matters in her own hands and run him over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, claim that this was an accident. That's kind of what they're doing.
And that's what she's on trial for right now. And we'll get into what evidence they may have.
Well, right. I mean, this is going to be interesting to me, because I'm wondering if the prosecution's going to kind of sit back and say, you know what, jury, we don't know exactly what happened, but you've got two theories here and you can convict her of both. Either she acted with intent, Or, you know, I guess best case for her, she drunkenly ran him over. But either way, she's guilty of these crimes. Convict her.
So let's
that's dangerous.
It is.
It's riding two horses. We talk about riding two horses and how it's really, really hard to do.
It is.
I mean, just getting your legs around two horses is just the circumference of those two animals makes for a very awkward position, maybe uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, I'm picturing really more like, you know, the Wild West shows where you have one foot on each horse, like, which is, you know, you have to know what you're doing to do that. Cause all of a sudden what happens if the horses go different directions?
Then you know, you're dismembered, I guess.
That's trouble.
Right.
That's trouble. Yeah. Well, especially you're dismembered if you're tied to them, right? That would be bad. It's like drawn and quartered, except
that's a whole different thing.
Drawn and halved. Right?
All right. Enough about that. But yeah, I mean, that's just one point I'm going to throw out there that I'm going to be very curious to hear the opening statement from. Remember, we're still in jury selection. This party hasn't totally started yet.
Yeah.
So we're going to see what the prosecutor says, but I can't wait to see if they're going to go for the intentional killing or the accidental killing theory.
Well, and it'll be very interesting to see how the defense organizes their case too, because what they are alleging, and we'll go into details, but they're using what's called a third party culprit defense.
Yep.
Right? So they are essentially saying that John O'Keefe was assaulted, beaten badly, and then tossed out into the snow to die, or left out into the snow to die. So that is their defense. Now, that defense, you can't just come right out and start with that defense. Okay? You can't open with that because you have to have evidence to support that. So what the defense has to do is they have to elicit testimony, elicit evidence that supports that defense. Then they can argue that to the jurors.
That's correct. So I think in a minute we're going to take a break to play Is This Legal? But on the other side of the break, I think what we'll do is we're going to walk you through the prosecution arguments, and we're going to walk you through the defense arguments.
And we're going to walk you through what evidence
is
out there. And how that evidence cuts.
Yeah, and who knows? If you're lucky, we might even have some way too early predictions for you on this one.
Way too early to predict. We should do way that too early be a to segment. Predict
predictions, right? But before we get cut to break, I'm going to leave you with one little kind of cliffhanger of evidence. Okay, so Jennifer McCabe is one of the women who is kind of at this gathering, and she ends up heading to the Alberts' home later for kind of this after party. You know, this is the party after the get-together at the bar where, you know, Karen Reed says she never made it to, and they say John O'Keefe never made it to because he was outside. But Jennifer McCabe did a Google search on her phone. And there is a dispute, Russ, about the timing of this search. It either happened at 2:30 in the morning, if you believe the defense experts, or it happened at 6:30 in the morning, if you believe the prosecution. But she searched, does it take to die when you stay out in the cold?
Right.
Now, the importance of that search term, because again, Jennifer McCabe is not charged with anything. She is apparently saying, Karen Reed asked me to type that search. I was directed by Karen to do that search. Now, I don't know what she's going to say about when she did it or why she did it, but that's just a little cliffhanger. Karen Reed, of course, is going to be making a big deal about that statement, saying, why would someone other than herself be Googling that information?
And especially at 2:23 a.m., which is a time when, really, I think there's no dispute, Karen Reed was back, passed out on John O'Keefe's couch at home.
Yeah, so why don't you guys chew on that little piece of fat for a few minutes, and we're going to come back and talk about it. But Russ, let's take a break, I think, to play a little Is This Legal?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be back on the other side of this break. Now it is time, dear listener. We hope it's time for you. Are you ready to play? Is this illegal?
I know I'm ready. I know I'm ready. All right. So,
all right. What do we got going on? This is, of course, where we play our game show with you, the listener. We have a fictitious legal scenario we are going to lay out for you to test your legal smarts. We'll quiz you about it. Russ, what do you got cooked up for us today?
I have a good one for us today. This is one, I'll tell you, this is a very difficult one. This is one where Colin and I really had to kind of go around in circles to see what we thought about the answer.
Maybe one of us did. I don't know. Speak for yourself, man.
but we go back to visit our good friends, Jebediah and Cornelius, and we start with Jebediah. Jebediah gets a visit from an old acquaintance of his named Black Bart.
Oh, he's bad news. I think we've heard of him.
We've heard of him in past ones, and he's always bad news. Black Bart is not a good dude. He has a long, violent criminal history. Now, Jebediah, for those that don't recall, ran with him in his younger days. But Jebediah has distanced himself in recent years. Now, Bart really likes Jebediah's shiny new moto car. And asks him to borrow it for a spin. Jebediah reluctantly agrees. You don't wanna say no to Black Bart.
No, you don't.
2 hours later, Black Bart comes back with a moto car, which now has heavy front end damage. Jebediah demands to know what happened. Bart says, "Well, I hit an old timer who was walking in the middle of the road. He died instantly. I crossed the border of Northamptonshire into Southamptonshire and buried the body in the ground."
The state of Southamptonshire.
Now, Southamptonshire is the hamlet across the state line to the south. Jebediah decides to report this to Northamptonshire's law enforcement officer, Officer Cornelius. Cornelius charges Bart with manslaughter and hit and run. Bart fights the case and ends up getting acquitted because Jebediah, the star witness, gets scared and leaves town during the trial. He was afraid of what Bart might do to him if he snitched.
Understandable.
Everyone knows snitches get stitches.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
However, it's not over. The district attorney in Southamptonshire says, "You know what? I'm going to prosecute Black Bart in our state, where the body was buried." After the acquittal in Northamptonshire, they subpoena Jebediah and begin the prosecution all over again, charging Black Bart with manslaughter and leaving the scene. Black Bart's lawyer objects, saying double jeopardy does not allow Black Bart to be prosecuted for the same crime twice. Judge Myrtle is on the bench in Southamptonshire. What should she do with the case?
Wow.
Should she throw it out on double jeopardy grounds or allow it to proceed?
You got a doozy, I would say, here. You know, first of all, I mean, again, Myrtle just showing her diversity. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that she lived across the state and was a judge in a different state.
She's a judicial officer in most states,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
She's well accomplished. Well, then
there's only two states in our country. You got Northamptonshire and Southamptonshire, I think, you know, so I guess it's not that big of a jurisdiction. Okay, so I think we're zeroing in on a double jeopardy question. How much do you know, listener, about double jeopardy? Okay.
For those who have listened before, you know at least a little bit.
Yeah. And in fact, I'll go so far as to tell you what double jeopardy is. Double jeopardy is a legal doctrine that says that a person cannot be charged twice for the same crime. That's right. The general philosophy. It sure sounds to me like that's what's going on here, Russ. It
does sound like that.
So, listener, how you doing at home? Do you got your answer locked in? Is this prosecution going to go forward, or is it going to be stopped dead in its tracks by Myrtle? What's she going to do? Russ, why don't you lay out the answer for our good listeners?
The answer is because it's a different state, and Black Bart is now being tried under Southamptonshire's criminal code rather than Northamptonshire's, which could have different elements. It's certainly written differently. As long as they have jurisdiction, they can proceed with that prosecution.
That is exactly right. This is an exception to the double jeopardy doctrine. Essentially, if you have criminal conduct that offends the laws of more than one state, you can be prosecuted separately in either of those states for the exact same conduct. I can tell you as a practical matter, most of the time, states talk to each other and we'll kind of sort these things out. And usually one will kind of lead the jurisdiction. They'll see what happens and see if a subsequent prosecution is necessary. But the key here is they're separate states. This can go forward. So Black Bart, if they can get Jebediah to court, and right. I'm going to say this time they can, he's probably going down. He's probably going
as,
down.
As for, long as they can prove the elements and as long as they can prove that nexus to the charge. And that's similar to other cases we've talked about where the federal jurisdiction applies as well as state.
Now, some of you may be saying out there, wait a minute. I distinctly heard Russell say that the actual hit and run occurred in Northamptonshire. So how can he be charged with that crime in Southamptonshire? The answer there is this kind of this word nexus. Okay. If either state has a nexus to the crime, then either state has jurisdiction. And because Black Bart buried the body, because he delivered this body, which was illegal, he's trying to conceal a crime here. That opens the door to his entire crime, and he can be prosecuted for the entire event.
And it's the idea, it's a continuing criminal episode. This is one criminal episode. This was the hit and run and then disposing of the body, which was part of that hit and run and attempt to avoid prosecution for it.
But he would not be eligible for retrial in Northamptonshire.
Right.
That ship was sailed once they got the acquittal.
Had he been smart and just buried the body right where off the road a little bit.
Moron.
Yeah. I mean, Black Bart was never professed to be smart.
Clearly never went to law school. Right. how'd you guys do at home? What'd you think? All right. I think we're going to get back then to our regularly scheduled programming. Hope you did well on Is This Legal? Stay tuned.
Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully you did well in this week's episode of Is This Legal? But now we are going to be talking, going back to the Karen Reed case, and let's dive into what the prosecution's case is, because we talked about on the front side that they upcharged this. They filed more serious charges through that state indictment, requiring them to prove intent for that second degree murder charge. So, Colin, let's talk about what evidence they may have that can show intent on Karen Reed's part to murder John O'Keefe.
Again, we're kind of limited by the fact that the trial hasn't begun yet, and we haven't heard this evidence flushed out. And, you know, we're kind of basing the information of what this trial is going to produce evidence-wise on media reports. But we've already talked about some of it, right? We talked about the fact that all was not well in this relationship. These people were fighting.
The Aruba bickering.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, there are apparently voicemails and text messages that Karen Reed had been sending to John O'Keefe that night, including kind of right up to when he's accused of dying, alleged to have died.
And after, if I'm reading the reports correct. So that's such an interesting piece of evidence. Because
And these are not, just to give you a flavor of what we're talking about, she's saying him, you know, you're a piece of, you know what, you're an effing pervert, you're
a cheater.
You're effing with around, all these things, you know.
I hate you.
Yeah, yeah, really, really nasty stuff.
So that stuff cuts both ways in my mind, because that in one side of the argument, that supports the prosecution's allegation and stance that this was intentional, that she hated him enough where she would run him over. On the flip side, those statements made presumably after he was struck or beat up and dumped out there show that she thinks he's alive.
Right.
Right? Like if she's leaving these angry voicemails for him between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m., she doesn't think he's dying out in the snow. Right. So that cuts for the defense.
Well, and again, if this was going to be an intentional killing, I guess why didn't she get out and make sure he was dead? Why leave him?
Right.
You know, why leave him there?
Right.
Why leave him at all? I mean, honestly, when I think more about this, it to me, it sounds like it could have been an accident. If she's you know, if she's actually hit him.
Right.
And we're going to get into the whole defense conspiracy theory about, you know, why they don't believe that happened at all. But I don't know. I don't know if they have the necessary elements for intent here.
Well, here's some more evidence they might have. And again, we haven't seen what comes out at trial, but apparently there was evidence recovered from her car, because every car tracks, you know, you have a black box in your car,
right?
Tracks acceleration, deceleration, movement,
location.
And so what I saw, there may be evidence that her car reversed at a extremely high rate of speed. Not consistent with someone pulling out of a driveway and then driving away, where that would have been an accidental killing, but consistent with someone who intentionally, in reverse, runs someone down. You also have the fairly extreme injuries that we went over, right? This isn't, if those injuries were caused by him being struck by a car, that car was not going slow. Right. So that all goes to intent.
Absolutely. Let's talk more evidence that the prosecution have. They have fragments of taillight that were found on the scene, as well as they were able to compare to the, you know, broken taillight on Miss Reed's car. Apparently, they found DNA evidence belonging to Mr. O'Keefe near the taillight area. This is a weird piece of evidence, and I guess I'm waiting to hear more evidence on this. But in one of the media reports I saw on this, Russ, they found I don't know how else to describe this. They found shards of glass that were apparently from an actual like glass that you would drink out of, that Mr. O'Keefe was seen with earlier in the evening.
Yeah, he took a glass from that waterfall bar and left with it.
Right, exactly. So they're saying that this was shattered. And, you know, I think they indicate that parts of this glass were also found on scene. So there is some evidence to say this. And then what about Miss Reed's statements herself, Russ, to paramedics on scene?
Yeah, well, she apparently, two paramedics, they said, how did this happen? And she said, I hit him.
No, Russ, she has gone on some network show. I think it was ABC. I don't know if it, I don't remember the show, but she's given an interview on this, and she was confronted with
that
statement.
Could have been CBS, could have been NBC.
one of the big three, probably. I actually do think it was ABC. Okay. But anyway, regardless, she's asked about this, and this is what she says. She's like, well, I did say that, but I was asking in the form of a question. Like, did I hit him? Did I hit him?
Oh, like, I hit him?
She's giving us the old My Cousin Vinny line. I shot the clerk. I shot the clerk. And then he confessed, I shot the clerk. You guys remember that? You know, so she's saying something similar to that. But she's apparently making statements, I hit him.
And there's a lot of, like, from these other witnesses, there's statements that she was commenting that she may have hit him, like, while they were out looking for the body. There is the fact that she was able to spot him.
She was the one who found him.
And this is
in front of a house.
She found him buried in snow in the dark. This is pre-dawn, where, like, the police who arrived said that he had to use a spotlight to see, like, the people hunched over his prone body. Mm-hmm. But yet she somehow from the car knows exactly where he is and spots him. So
maybe because she remembers hitting him and remembers exactly where this happened is what the prosecution, right, of course, is saying.
Right.
I mean, you know, really, to summarize the prosecution's theory, they're saying this doesn't get any simpler. They're saying that these two people were having big problems. They're saying that he got out of the car, she ran him over. There's physical evidence supporting that. She basically confessed to it the next day. She's the one who discovered the body because she knew exactly where it was. He's got injuries consistent with being run over. This is, at a minimum, vehicular homicide / manslaughter. At its maximum, this was an intentional killing. That's what they're saying.
All right.
So Russ, what does the defense say about all this? Yeah. What is their theory?
So the defense has this essentially third party culprit defense.
Yeah. Strap on your seatbelts, folks.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
And so what their theory is that John O'Keefe had a longstanding feud. He had a beef with Colin Albert, who was Brian Albert's nephew.
Remember the Albert name? Okay, so Brian Albert and his wife, these are people who were out earlier in the night with this group of people, and this is where the after party is going to be. This is where Mr. Keefe was found.
Right, and Colin Albert was at the home that night.
Right.
Now, it's disputed. There's question about when he left, but he was definitely there earlier. So the defense's theory is that Karen Reed dropped John off. John went to the house. They were probably drinking more. John got into it with Colin. Then Brian and Colin beat John up, giving him a broken nose, black eyes, those cuts, those abrasions. By the way, that cut on his arm, they say came from their German Shepherd dog.
Yeah, and apparently the dog has been shipped out somewhere, no one knows where the dog is.
Yep, dog and, has been gotten rid of.
Yeah.
Right? So they're saying that they beat him, and they beat him so badly, and he didn't come to. And once he wasn't coming to, they tossed him out in the snow in a place where it might be consistent with him being hit by a car.
Right.
And so that is the short version of what their argument is. Now there's another player here who ties into this. So far we have Colin Albert and Brian Albert, right? There's a couple other players, right? So do you want to talk about the ATF agent right now?
I think, yeah, let's talk about that, because this is just a weird monkey wrench. Again, we don't know a lot about this right now, but there is apparently a person named Brian Higgins who is an agent with the U.S. Tobacco and Firearms, with the
Alcohol, ATF. Tobacco, and Firearms.
What did I say?
Tobacco and Firearms.
Oh, sorry.
Alcohol, too.
I forgot alcohol, too. Yeah. So the ATF, right? He's apparently there at the house that night.
Right.
Hanging out.
There's a lot of law enforcement there. Right.
Right. And what is interesting about this is that the feds, Russ, have initiated their own investigation into the Karen Reed case.
So unusual.
Very, very, very unusual, where like the FBI will start their own criminal investigation into a homicide, especially one that's already being investigated by the local authorities.
And especially one where there's no really obvious nexus to federal law.
Right. I will tell you guys, the feds have been tight-lipped on this. The U.S. attorney for the district that's doing this investigation has not made any public statements at all about why, you know, this investigation is going on. Here's what I can say, Russ. You remember that internet search that Jennifer McCabe made about how long does it take to die in the cold?
Right.
What we know is that in the 3,000-page report that the feds authored on this investigation, they indicated that that search was done at 6:30 in the morning, hours after Mr. Keefe was killed, not at 2:30 in the morning, like the defense is saying. They're saying basically we used new updated software and this search was done much later. So that's just this weird monkey wrench in this whole thing. But again, we're wondering, why are the feds involved in this at all? It could be because of the presence of this ATF agent.
Right. That could have caused that. And it's important to note, feds have made no arrests.
Yeah.
They haven't indicted anyone. There's no federal charges. So they did. And this happened 2 years ago, right? So this is a long, long time for this investigation. And there's been no federal charges.
Can we offer maybe some
speculation?
Speculation, of course, where we cite our theories with absolutely no evidence.
That's where we thrive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one could speculate that this is kind of like the Is This Legal we just talked about. This could be the feds just kind of maybe they're concerned about the way the state prosecution's going. Maybe they want to do their own investigation. An officer died. They want to make sure that this was thorough. And if you know,
if
the local authorities mess this up and he gets off, they might be able to charge him with a federal crime. Ooh. That doesn't violate double jeopardy.
All right, how about this, Colin? How about maybe the feds are looking at it because maybe they think there is a big, wide-ranging law enforcement conspiracy at the local level, and they're doing an investigation to see if there's any monkey business going on with the local cops.
Or if you really want to get conspiracy theoried out on this stuff, what if the feds are actually involved in the cover-up, Russ? What if this ATF agent was buddy-buddy with Mr. Albert and his son? It was like, yeah, I'll help you cover this up. Somehow it works its way up through the U.S. Department of Justice. And they're like, maybe we better babysit this thing.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Oh, man, this is juicier and juicier the more we talk about it, right?
All right, well, let's talk about the lead investigator with the Massachusetts State Patrol, this Trooper Proctor.
Trooper Proctor.
Okay, yeah. Because he's the one who is the lead investigator. He's the one who's tasked with everything here. He's in the man in charge for the State Patrol. You know what? It turns out he has a little bit of a connection with the Albert family.
Yeah, a significant connection. Yeah. I mean, this isn't just people who know each other.
No, it turns out Colin Albert, this guy who allegedly
had the beef with O'Keefe.
Yes. So Colin Albert was actually the ring bearer in Proctor's sister's wedding.
Right.
That is more than casual acquaintances.
And remember, this is the guy who's talking about discovering the additional taillight evidence.
This is, yeah, exactly. He went back 4 or 5 days later and found additional taillight pieces. He says it was an innocent mistake, but he had the wrong time for the time that Karen Reed's car was towed, okay? And the time that he put on it would have left him 72 or 78 minutes unattended with the car. So the defense's position is this guy is part of the cover-up. He is taking care of his family friends, the Alberts, and he is the one who caused the damage to her car. He is the one who got the taillight pieces. He is the one who put all the evidence there that puts her as the one who backed into him.
That's right. Yep. Wild. I will tell you that the Alberts, the people in the home, no one has been charged.
Right.
No one has been charged with any crime related to the death of Officer O'Keefe. Is it O'Keefe or Keefe? I
think it's O'Keefe.
It is O'Keefe. I apologize. O'Keefe. Now, Russ, let's just kind of break this down from a common sense perspective, first of all. Okay. First of all, let's talk about just the use of this defense, an alternate suspect defense.
Yeah.
Is this a risky defense, Russ?
You know, if your goal is to inject reasonable doubt, right? Because this case has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So by injecting this defense, you don't have to prove that it happened.
Right.
You just have to put enough doubt in the jurors' minds where they can say, you know what, maybe. And if they get to that spot of maybe, that's good enough for the defense.
I mean, I am not expecting there to be any sort of Perry Mason moment in court where the attorneys are cross-examining Brian Albert, for example.
Right.
And they're going to be saying things, you killed him, didn't you? You beat him to a pulp and then you left him out in the cold and left her holding the bag. You're not going to see any of that. In fact, I think that's where I think the risk is in running this defense. Yeah, you can throw that defense up at the wall.
Right.
But at the end of the day, is it just a conspiracy theory without any evidence to support it?
Doesn't
or do
make
you
sense.
Have anything? Do you have any evidence to actually suggest that this is true? And I think that's where they're going to have some limitations, Russ. It's easy to throw this theory out there. It's a whole nother thing to prove it. And even, let's be clear, the burden of proof is on the prosecution. The prosecution has to prove their theory beyond a reasonable doubt. Miss Reed does not have to prove her innocence. However, Russ, when you're making the alternative suspect defense, I'm sorry, But you better have some teeth to that defense. You can't just say, oh, well, that guy killed him.
Yeah, I hear you. I think you do have some evidence you can point to. And it is conspiracy stuff, and there's explanations for it all. But I think when you have the wrong time on the police narrative,
yeah,
with the car, where you then have a window, when you have this Proctor coming out himself and finding new evidence after the forensics team has gone through, whose sole job it is to collect evidence, and he says, oh yeah, they missed this. They missed pieces of a taillight that they were specifically looking for.
Yeah.
That's a problem. The fact that he's actually doing the investigation, that he didn't recuse himself, that he didn't say, you know what, I actually have an interest in this case, and I know the family who lives here. I probably shouldn't be the one investigating it, but he didn't get himself off that case. That's a problem. So, I mean, none of these are smoking guns,
right?
You know, these are all little things, but I do think they have things they can point to.
Things I want to know, though, that we just don't know right now. Were the Alberts interviewed after this? Were they photographed? Was there any evidence of
that's
fighting
good,
on their person?
That's was a great
any,
question.
Was there any evidence? Did they search the house? Was there any evidence of a scuffle? Was there any blood? Was there any DNA found by Officer O'Keefe in that house?
All of
those.
I mean,
honestly, I would expect there to be a fair amount of DNA with the guy's injuries.
And if that guy got those injuries from being beat to a pulp, then whoever did it would absolutely have injuries on their hands, on their knuckles, and probably some, you know, offensive injuries too. This is a cop who probably knows how to take care of himself. Presumably he would have at least gotten a swing or two in.
Right.
So all of that is very, very significant. I would agree.
Now, I want to talk about one more thing that's going on with this case that I think just kind of has to be mentioned. Some of you may have heard about this trial, or you may have seen hashtags on your social media that say free Karen Reed. There is kind of a movement out there that has really kind of latched on to this conspiracy theory.
Not even kind of a movement. It's a movement.
It is a movement. And I would say the principal pusher of this is a blogger by the name of Turtle Boy. Turtle Boy's real name is a guy named Aidan Carney. And his persona online is Turtle Boy. He's a blogger in Massachusetts. And here he is basically posting on social media, making videos, supporting this narrative that Karen Reed is the victim of this giant cover-up, and that she didn't do anything wrong, that she's innocent, and that all these people are nefarious actors, and this is going down. This guy has 57,000 Twitter followers. And he has been he started communicating with Karen Reed directly back in April of 2023, Russ. Karen Reed has apparently spent over 40 hours on the phone with him. They've exchanged almost 200 emails, and she has been giving him evidence about the other players in this conspiracy. This guy is taking those and running with them. He has been charged criminally, Russ, in Massachusetts with witness tampering because he allegedly confronted one of the witnesses. We believe it is this
Jennifer McCabe,
who's the one who did the internet search.
Right.
He apparently confronted her house and said something to the effect of, you know, why are you doing this to Karen? Something like that.
Well, whatever it is, that's a problem. You can't do that to witnesses in a trial about their testimony.
He's facing criminal charges for this. Of course, he has not backed down. He is thumbing his nose at his own prosecution. He's basically saying he's a martyr. He's saying that he is one more, person that's being silenced in this government conspiracy theory. So all of this is going on in the background.
Yeah.
You've got so many protesters with free Karen Reed t-shirts, Russ, that they actually had to create a 200-foot bubble outside the courthouse to keep these people away from the jurors.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of fervor in this case. She has a lot of supporters. She has a lot of champions kind of.
She has detractors too. There's both sides.
Oh yeah.
There's people who are shouting at her that she's a cop killer.
Right.
She's locking up.
There's an equally strong movement. Justice for John O'Keefe.
Yeah.
And that's trending as well.
It's turned into a circus.
It is a circus. So guys, that's what we're going to cover today. We wanted to give you a top level introduction to what we think is going to be a fascinating case. Russ, we are super early. This is going to be a long trial. It's going to be 6 to 8 weeks, so we're not going to know anything for some time. But, you know, Russ, you and I have never shied away from predictions in this show.
Way too early for prediction.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
Yeah. So knowing that, obviously, we haven't heard one shred of evidence, and, you know, it's our show. We can amend our picks anytime we want to. Why don't we make some preliminary picks on what we think the verdict's going to be?
All right. Based on the very limited, you know, media-dominated information that we have right now, I am going to say that Karen Reed is going to be convicted of manslaughter but acquitted of second-degree murder. So essentially what I'm saying is the jury's going to find that she ran him over. That yep. She was drunk and he died due to that, but they're not going to be able to prove intent. Yeah. That's where I'm falling on this.
Yeah. Just to be a contrarian, Russ, I think I probably agree with you, but to be a contrarian, just to be a little bit different, I'm going to say that she gets acquitted of everything.
Completely.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't feel great about that prediction. I tend to think that the jury might do what you kind of suggested. I don't know if there's enough here for an intentional killing, but you got damage to her car. The statements that she made, those are problematic. But I'll tell you, we live in a world where mistakes by law enforcement can snowball.
Yeah.
And get people thinking. And it's a weird case, Russ. It's all I can say. It's a weird case.
There's a lot of things that are lining. Like, things have to line up in a really specific way for the defense to have a chance.
Right.
But just initially, some of the stuff seems to be falling, whether it's coincidence or not, into that line. You know, so it's very interesting. I'm going to be really interested to see what the evidence actually shows at trial.
I really want to see Jennifer McCabe testify. I think she's going to be very important.
She is a key witness. She not only did that text, you know, whether it was at 2 or at 6.
The search. Yep.
But she also is one of the witnesses who has Karen Reed saying, maybe I hit him. Did I hit him?
Right.
Oh, one other thing that I forgot to bring up. Allegedly, there's surveillance footage out there of Karen Reed driving around before she goes to Jennifer McCabe and this other guy to go look for the body. There's evidence of her driving to the bar or towards the bar and then towards the Albert's house before she goes to the other people, like possibly looking for the body on her own.
Hmm.
Which, again, I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah. Well, weird case. Thanks again to Jay from Boston for showing us this case.
Boston.
This is a really good one. You sent us down quite the rabbit hole, Jay.
You did.
There's a lot here. But heck, rabbit holes are our business. So, all right. Well, enough murder. Enough, sex, drugs, and violence.
What's it time for?
It is time for
the Dumb Criminal of the Week.
Your favorite segment, mine too. Russ, we got another international one. I think we're going international back to back. We went to Australia last time.
Yes.
We're going to New Zealand this time.
Okay, so just a little hop away from Australia.
Yeah, hop, skip, and a jump. Our DCOTW is 23-year-old Samuel Evan Lake, a Kiwi criminal, okay. Russ. So Mr. Lake starts stealing cars in the city of Christchurch, New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
and the Christchurch police starts taking notice, and they identify him. They're able to get to figure out who he is,
okay.
and they have an old mugshot of him. He had been in trouble before, so they put his mugshot on their social media page, and they say, hey, we're looking for this guy. We'd like the public's help in locating this person, okay? Now, Mr. Lake appears to be of the rather brazen sort, Russ. And he decides to log on to his Facebook post and respond to the Christchurch Police Department's clarion call. And his message is, quote, I need to take a new mugshot, LOL, unquote. Now, the Christchurch Police immediately respond to this post saying,
come see us. We will arrange at no cost.
We can take care of that new mugshot.
And Mr. Lake, undaunted, immediately responds, if they were only as good as finding me as they are at comebacks, LMAO, unquote.
Wow. Now,
due to its hilarity, Russ, this post is going viral. Okay. And these comments are getting thousands of likes, and Mr. Lake gets arrested 9 hours after his last post. It turns out, Russ, that a lot of people saw the post and had no issue identifying him and giving him up. The Christchurch police later thanked the public, and true to their word, post a new mugshot of Mr. Lake that I don't believe cost him anything. And Mr. Lake ended up making that his profile picture on his social media.
Oh, my goodness.
I actually made up the last part. Yeah. But I'm just going to say this on this mugshot. I'm looking at it right now, and I recognize, dear listener, that you can't see this. This is a handsome guy, Russ. I mean, I'm looking at a guy. I kind of have maybe like Matrix Keanu Reeves vibes. This could be a headshot, man.
I mean, he's got a weird look on his face, though. Hence his issue, right? His issue with the post. Wow.
But yeah, so that's what's going on with Mr. Lake, our DCOTW. So yes, he was convicted, and that's Mr. Lake's story. What do you think about that, Russ?
I mean, I think that Mr. Lake was too brazen for his britches, as they say.
I agree. Very brazen. Good looking dude, though. I mean, honestly, I think once he gets out, I think he's absolutely going to have no problems taking that headshot, and getting on a soap opera, man.
Yeah. All right.
Like he's at least going to last three episodes before he gets killed off, at least. So, all right. Well, what knuckleheads? This is where we rate the offender 1 to 5, one being not so stupid, 5 being the stupidest thing we've ever seen. How many knuckleheads are we awarding for Mr. Lake?
Honestly, I am going to give him a solid 4. I think that he's a friggin' idiot. Like, he's the one who made something go viral that got him caught. Like, just shut your pie hole, Lake.
I love the fact that he was caught like 9 hours later.
Yeah.
That's really, really funny. I got to say, I'm not going to give him the full 5. Because he made me laugh with his comments.
I mean, it was funny.
I like it. If only they were as good at finding me as they were at comebacks. I don't think the police liked that one.
No.
I think they got the last laugh. That's in fact for sure they did. Yeah. So I'll give a 4 as well. That's nice work, Mr. Lake. That was entertaining. All right. That is going to do it for us. Please do what Jay from Boston did. If you guys have a story, if you guys have a topic, if you guys got some skinny on some lowdown,
don't hoard it.
Yeah, come on, share alike. Let us know about it, and we might just do a whole podcast about it and give you credit. Russ, where can people find us?
You can find us on Twitter at IsThisLegalPod, on Facebook at Habits McCallan, or via email at DenverCrimeLaw@gmail.com. Everyone, thanks for listening. And hit us up and be safe.
Yeah, we'll follow this one. We'll have more to come on this one for sure. Talk to you later.
Johnny Law looked at me, said, Jebediah, can't you see them things you're doing just ain't right. Going round this town, stirring up a fright. You can run, won't get far. Driving in your motor car. Look Cornelius right in the eye. Said you ain't got proof. I ain't the guy. Sinner.